Tonight, Brandon C. Price rides sidecar, but first, we cover the Iowa caucus results with Pat Brady. We'll also cover politics in Illinois as we chat with Senator Connolly. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Thank you for tuning in. I am your host, Patty Vasquez. I'm actually broadcasting from Los Angeles, so I feel like we're all over the place. We actually have State Senator Michael Connolly on the line, who is on his way back from Iowa because he has been working very hard on the Marco Rubio campaign. And for third place, it's a good turnout, wasn't it, Senator?
It was. We performed better than the pundits expected, and we're really excited. He's propelled into New Hampshire with a ton of momentum, and we're really excited tonight.
Yeah, the turnout was much better than they had expected, and they thought the increase in turnout would be because of Trump, but perhaps it was because of Trump to vote against him. Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility, and anecdotally, I heard that from one of my colleagues in the General Assembly, whose name will remain anonymous. But I was an hour and a half south of Des Moines in a town called Cheriton. There were 700 people in a distribution plant in this small town in Iowa. And it's the most amazing political experience I've ever been part of. And I thought the same thing, Patty. I texted some of my fellow Rubio team, and I said, boy, it's a big turnout. Are these Trump people? And it turned out, it was kind of a mix between Cruz and Rubio, which we were extremely pleased, obviously, at the result.
Well, you have been working for a while. I've been following your Facebook feed and your commitment to the Marco Rubio campaign. What is it about him that draws you to his candidacy?
I mean, it's as simple as his father was a bartender, his mother was a hotel maid. And when he talks about that immigrant story, I mean, I think of my grandmother arriving here at the age of 17. My great-grandparents were left and still in Ireland. And she made her way, and she prospered. She actually was a maid. And all of her children achieved college educated. And her grandchildren, have done pretty well for themselves. So it's that immigrant story, and it's a positive delivery of Republican principles. It's very Reagan-esque. He reminds me of Ronald Reagan and John F. Kennedy, really.
He did mention that, that parents want to leave a better life for their children than they had. And that was a core part of his speech. But he was saying that we're losing America. What is it exactly he means by what are we losing America to, would you say?
I would say we're losing, there's this entitlement, the government is going to solve all of our problems. That's not what we're founded on. And the notion that we need to grow the private sector to allow for the ability to pay for things like helping the disabled, helping our veterans, helping our seniors. So we've kind of gotten away from the private sector grows the economy to pay for the things that we all cherish, frankly. Today there seems to be this, how do I get something from the government? And, as Margaret Thatcher said about socialism, the only good thing about socialism is you run out of other people's money.
Well, one of the things that I believe Bernie... Right. As far as giving people the freedom to access to capitalism, the free market, one of the things that Bernie Sanders mentioned in his speech is how much the campaign finance system is broken. And you have billionaires who are kind of running this and have more access to it than maybe, average citizens. What would you say to something like that, the campaign finance situation we have?
I'll say this. The thing I'll never forget about the Iowa caucus is I felt like I was, when I ran for state house, I had a headquarters, I had people coming and going, making calls, knocking on doors. In Iowa, it is grassroots. It is, what I experienced the last two weekends in Iowa were people that volunteered from Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin. So all the money Donald Trump's money really went nowhere in Iowa. You have to go and engage these citizens. The story in New Hampshire is, the story is, I don't know the candidate if I haven't met them twice. So as far as all these billionaires, I would beg to differ, because if that were the case, Donald Trump would have had 45% and we'd be nominating him. And that's certainly not what happened today and tonight in Iowa.
And one of the other things that Marco Rubio said in his speech was that, you know, the men and women that came over and, you know, were a part of the colonies, you know, they base this country on the rule of God, and that that comes before the government. You know, when people hear that, they might get a little nervous, thinking that doesn't sound like a separation of church and state. Did you have any thoughts when he said that?
No, I mean, he's driven by his faith. A lot of us are driven by our faith, but no, I don't see any problem. But thank God we trust on the dollar bill.
Right. It just sounded a little more like God's rule before the government rule. But before we let you go, because I know that you're heading home and we're on your speakerphone, which is good. I'm glad that your hand's free. But the last thing he mentioned was that his goal is to unify conservatives. What would you say has divided conservatives? Is it part of this campaign or just a trend?
Here's what seems to have happened is there's this gotcha politics out there, and it's most prevalent in my party, frankly, and everyone's tweaking and comparing vote records and whatnot. You can't tell me that Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, they're conservatives in my world. And what Marco's position is there's a swath of people who consider themselves conservatives. They may disagree on this issue or that issue, but he can bring them together to win a general election. He's from a battleground state, Florida, and I wish I had another 10 minutes to talk about the millennials. I have three millennials, and they are huge Marco Rubio supporters, not because of their old man, but because they've listened to his podcast. They talk amongst themselves the way they do with social media, Instagram, and the like. But Marco Rubio reaches across a whole different spectrum of the electorate, which, frankly, we need. I said to this group in Cheriton tonight, I said, I wish the entire electorate in America was Cheriton, Iowa. But it's not. We have to get independents and Democrats and moderates and liberals to join us to vote for our candidate for president. And that's what I think Marco's talking about.
Well, I do appreciate your passion, and I know that you have a lot of work to do. By the way, we are speaking to State Senator Michael Connolly of the 21st District. When do you head back to – are you heading back to Springfield now?
No, next week I head back. We're not in session this week.
Oh, you're not in session this week. Come on, you guys. You got to fix the state. There's a lot to do.
Hey, we don't control the calendar, only the majority party. The other guys do. But President Obama is coming to Springfield on February 10th.
Yeah, I heard he's going to address the general. Yeah, that's what I heard. I'm sorry, I'm going to miss that. Well, your Facebook friends are pulling for you to get if Rubio does win, they're pulling for you to get some sort of a cabinet position or at least ambassador to Ireland. So,
maybe ambassador to DuPage County or something like that.
Well, there you go. Well, I envy your passion because I don't have anyone I'm drawn to yet. But congratulations. I know that was a strong result tonight in Iowa. And be safe driving home, all right?
Thanks, Betty. I will.
All right. Excellent. Have a great night. Bye.
Thanks, Betty.
Thank you. That was State Senator Michael Connolly. I'd seen that he was on Steve Cochran's show, Craig, so I thought it would be fun to have him on. I know we have Brandon C. Price in the studio. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful, Patty. I'm feeling the burn. How are you?
Did you get a chance to hear his speech?
I did. Well, I heard the first probably 7 minutes of it on the way here, actually, on NPR.
Ah.
Sorry.
Well, you know what? we're gonna come back and talk about Hillary and Bernie when we come back, and then we'll talk to Pat Brady after 11:30. But I also want to invite our listeners to call in 312-981-7200. I know that the station at WGN, we've been very excited about Iowa, and I want to know you're feeling the burn, but I'm wondering if anyone's feeling the burnout from the coverage, or if there are people who are really jazzed by this, because I've watched many of the speeches, actually all five of the speeches, Rubio, Cruz, and Hillary, and Bernie, and who else? I'm missing somebody. Oh, Trump, yeah.
Way to miss that one.
No, that's a good move.
Somebody.
Let's start forgetting him now.
Well, his was the most like sort of conversational. Like, everyone told me I shouldn't come here. No one likes me here, and here I am. You know, it was so different than the other ones that I forgot that it was a speech. more after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting from our Allstate Showcase Studios West. I am in Los Angeles for some work, but back home in our studio, we have Adam Phillips making sure that everything sounds fine, and we have Brandon C. Price co-hosting the show tonight. We have Rob Martier up in news as Morella Leon traffic, and Craig Collins taking your calls and texts. And he mentioned to me off the air that John wanted to join the conversation. He actually Janini, but he wanted to go by John because I guess he thought we wouldn't say it well. Can you say Giannini? Giannini.
Brandon, Giannini.
You guys sound great.
Yeah, that's probably why he
But I'm probably not the one to ask.
maybe that's why he didn't want us to do
that. That's why he went.
He made the point that you know, when Marco Rubio, by the way, I feel like saying all the Hispanic candidates with the accents on their names, Marco Rubio, when he said that, you know, God's rule comes before government, that means that we all would have to agree on the same creator. And that's kind of something that caught my ear as well. But because I was having a little bit of a volume issue on my end. And thank you, Adam Phillips, for helping me straighten that out. And also the senator was on speakerphone. So, you know, we were having a conversation, not a debate. I do kind of flinch at comments like that. Brandon, what do you think when someone says that God's rule must come before government?
Well, my vote's never based on religion. I will say that there's a pretty large there's a section of the Bible, I'm pretty sure, that talks about how it's important to not only respect the laws of God and the Bible, but also the laws of the land that you live in and keep them from conflicting. So,
right.
And I know a lot of, you know, my whole family's conservative and very religious. So I guess I don't shudder at it. I completely understand where you're coming from. And because I, too, obviously would want the laws of the land that everybody decided on to be above any other law that I'd have to go by. But I don't think, just coming from that religious conservative perspective, I don't think that's what that means. I think it's more of a nod to understanding that the laws he wants to uphold and create come from him being a good person, which he derives from faith. Not necessarily the rest of us do, but we may come to the same conclusions about, like, you know, don't murder people and stuff like that.
That's a good one. I find that to be an excellent one. I guess I come from the perspective of our creator has put us here with logic and reason to sort of work it out amongst ourselves, rather than sort of having this over, you know, this top layer of God's rule. We kind of have created our own laws reflecting our Christian or Muslim or Jewish, or, you know, that's the thing. There are so many, you know, Buddhists. How do we account for all the different, you know, you do have to come to that conclusion that do we have the same creator? It's sort of our interpretation sometimes of why we're here and what purpose.
I agree. I think it comes down to, well, then let's vote on it, you know? I mean, and his vote is driven by his viewpoint, which is faith-based.
Exactly.
And generally, like the murder thing, I hope that's across the board.
No murder. I like that.
Don't eat meat on certain days and things like that, really specific stuff to religions. And obviously, I hope he's not bringing in. But if he does want to, he's welcome to vote for that. And we'll all talk about it together.
Exactly. Well, coming up after the news, we'll talk to Pat Brady and get some more, some more insight on the Iowa caucus. You're listening Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studios West. I am in Los Angeles for the week, and I'm kind of missing – I wish I was in the studios because it sounds like it was an exciting day at WGN. We have Brandon C. Price riding sidecar, and he's in the studio there and joining me for all of our interviews. Right now on the line, we have Pat Brady, who is the founder of the Next Generation Public Strategies and the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. Hey, Pat, how's it going tonight?
Great. What a night, huh?
It's exciting. I did watch all five speeches. It's weird. There's a great tweet out that Marco Rubio makes third place look really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, he got out there first, claimed victory, if not a moral victory, and moving on to New Hampshire. But I'm here in Des Moines, and I caught the tail end of the Trump concession speech in the ballroom down here. So that was interesting to watch too.
What is your take on Trump? Because, he mentioned in his speech that when he started this campaign, they told him to stay away from Iowa. No one's going to vote for you. He's a bit of a braggart, let's put it that way. But he seemed, just kind of chill about being in second place. That was my takeaway from it.
Yeah, actually, probably momentum-wise and perception-wise, this was a pretty bad night for him. I got a much lower vote or percentage than I think he told everybody he was going to get. And he ran around the country saying, I lead in all the polls by a lot. And the bottom line is he lost tonight and almost got third place. So bad night for Team Trump. So we'll see what it does to the polls in New Hampshire after just kind of soaked in.
What was your take on Ted Cruz's speech tonight, his victory speech?
You know, it was fine. I'm not a big Ted Cruz fan for the Republican Party because I think, you know, he did win tonight with a big turnout from evangelicals in a very conservative state, at least in the Republican primary. So it's fine, but I think for Republicans to win, we're going to have to pitch a bigger tent than Ted Cruz is going to offer.
Do you have – well, it sounds – then is Marco Rubio your guy?
I think Marco Rubio matches up very well against Hillary Clinton. I think he's a candidate for us. It's a candidate of the future. He represents a lot of good things that we need to do to attract more voters. I mean, we've not done well at the presidential level for several cycles, so I think he'd be great. But, you know, I'm a Kasich delegate, so I think he'd be a great nominee for us as well.
Let's talk a little bit about the numbers beyond the three that we've been talking about, because Ted Cruz did win Iowa, Donald Trump came in second, and Marco Rubio was third. Where did Jeb Bush and Governor Kasich end up?
They're way towards the bottom, you know, 1-2% of the vote. Governor Kasich pulled out of here a while ago, but Jeb Bush, you know, spent a lot of time and a lot of money here. So I think a lot of these candidates we'll be reevaluating after New Hampshire. The Cruises, the Bushes, the Kasich, the Christies. We'll see if they can go on beyond New Hampshire.
Right, because Mike Huckabee has already announced that he'll be suspending his campaign, correct?
Yeah, I'm waiting to see what Rand Paul might do.
What is your sense of about the turnout? Because this is record numbers, 50% increase from 2012, 180,000 voters turned out for this. Did you expect it to be that big?
You know, everybody expected it to be big, but they expected it would be big because of Trump. But the reality is the turnout was big because evangelicals turned out. So as much as people wanted to say that Trump had rewritten the rules in Iowa, meaning, you know, just kind of fly in, fly out, do a television ad kind of campaign, the reality is the rules haven't changed. You got to come here and campaign, and evangelicals are a very important part of what you need to get to win.
Now, I know that you're passionate about the Republican Party. Did you get a chance to watch Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders speeches?
I didn't watch the concession speech. I did go to a couple rallies when I was here, and so I did pay attention. But I'm doing the show with Cochran. So we're covering, trying to cover both sides of it. But yeah, it was interesting. I think it's kind of a bad night for Secretary Clinton. She had a 50-point lead 8 months ago here in Iowa, and she basically ran dead even with a guy who's identified as a socialist in a fairly conservative, part of the country. So I think it was kind of a rough night for her.
Well, my co-host in the studio, Brandon C. Price, hails from the South. He's originally from Alabama and also from Texas. And we've talked about this before, how Bernie Sanders might fare against Hillary Clinton in the red states. And in Iowa, this is already too close to call. It's funny that there's even a concession state, a concession speech, considering it's 0.10%. I think we're down to how many? Rob Martier has the numbers, I know, but it's so narrow, I can't imagine claiming victory in either one of them.
Yeah, she got out early and said they had won it. And I see on the board right here, it's 0.2%. So yeah, that's a political strategy. But I think there's some risk in that for the Clinton campaign, because this is an anti-establishment year. And if you're kind of saying, hey, I won, I'm going to leave, when you maybe didn't win and you're not really being respectful of the insurgent, that might backfire on you. But we'll have to wait and see.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I've got, Patty, yeah, I've got the numbers right here in front of me from the Des Moines Register, which really is the gold standard as far as this is concerned. 96.61% reporting in the Democratic caucuses, 49.85% for Hillary Clinton, 49.56% for Bernie Sanders.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just
more important than the percentages are the number of delegates. That's within 10, I think. Isn't it?
Yeah, right now the delegate breakdown is 22 for Hillary and 21 for Bernie Sanders.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does this make people take Bernie more? Because anytime you hear from the Republican viewpoint, it's always, well, can they beat Hillary? Can they beat Hillary? Does this change that conversation, and do you have to take Bernie a little bit more serious, or is it not going to really matter until we get past New Hampshire?
I think it doesn't really matter until he gets beyond New Hampshire, but you're going to have the SEC primaries March 1st, and Secretary Clinton will do very well there. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to come up and get into the, you know, Illinois, Ohio, and those kind of places. And I think, I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to do that well in Illinois. So, I mean, I still don't think it's plausible that he's going to win the nomination, but he certainly knocked the Clinton campaign back on their heels a little bit. They were,
we were on the ground
for 2 days here, and they were very, the Clinton campaign was very confident.
Oh, interesting. We talked to State Senator Michael Connolly before the news, and he was mentioning how much millennials made a difference, he feels, in particular with Marco Rubio's campaign. And I think we're seeing a lot of that with Bernie Sanders. What was your sense of that in Iowa? Were you seeing? Because I saw on at Hillary's at her victory speech, a lot of young voters in comparison with what I saw at Ted Cruz's rally.
You know, I was at a rally for Hillary last night, and it was mainly donors and you know, people 40 and 50, not a ton of young people. Insofar as Marco Rubio, I did hear from several people that were reporting in that there was a big uptick in college turnout, which I thought was going to go to Bernie, but a lot of it, I understand, was for Rubio. So that's exactly what the Republican Party needs if they want to succeed. We've alienated a lot of millennials over the last couple of years, so it's a good sign if we have a candidate that can attract those kind of folks.
And I think you touched on this a little bit, that that Ted Cruz is not your candidate, and neither is Donald Trump. Someone like Marco Rubio is someone you're more drawn to. Marco Rubio, in his speech, mentioned how divided the conservative party is, and you are the former head of the Illinois GOP. And I actually was at a few events with you when things kind of went a little bit, seemed to go a little sideways, and the divisiveness within the Republican Party in Illinois. What do you think he has to do, or whoever the candidate is that does become possibly the next president of the United States, what can they do to unify not just conservatives, but the entire country, should they assume that office?
Well, you know, do what we did in the 80s when we were the party of big ideas and big economic solutions, and strong national security, we did very well. But when you get away from it and start getting into issues of process, so we're just going to shut things down, kind of like Ted Cruz did, we don't do very well. And the party of ideas always wins. And if we can get back to that, and he can stay on that, then that divide within, you know, the conservatives, it's certainly less apparent. And Marco Rubio is a conservative, so the conservatives in the Republican Party should be happy to have him as a nominee.
Yeah, I that's one of the things that I kind of was latching onto, because it was the first time I really heard someone talk that openly and strongly about the divided party. I'm sure that it's been a conversation, but now obviously it's, you know, every station is carrying these speeches. The thing is that I was struck by how many of the candidates have talked about, you know, turning their backs on or wanting to overturn, whether it's gay marriage or, you know, defunding Planned Parenthood. That's what I was talking about, unifying the entire country, because there do seem to be things that that can be sort of leaving people behind or trying to, you know, exclude them from the process.
Yeah, I think if Marco Rubio spends his time focusing on overturning gay marriage, then we're going to lose. Because you lose millennials. 65% of the people now support it, including a growing group of evangelicals. We're going to lose. If we focus on those kinds of issues, we never do well. Focus on the things that Republicans have great ideas on. You know, reforming Obamacare, national security, foreign policy, economic growth. We stay on those kind of topics, we do very well.
Wonderful. Wonderful to talk to you tonight, Pat Brady. We've been talking.
Hey, have fun out there in L.A., Patty. We have fun with the WGN crew.
Well, tell them, go knock on everybody's door and tell them to just get up and stay up all night. I think you should pull an all-nighter with Cochran and Andrea and Kevin Powell. And, you know, just why rest? It's the only time you're going to be there for this caucus.
I think Kevin and Andrea maybe, but I doubt I'm pulling the all-nighters with Cochran.
I don't blame you. Well, get
no,
some rest.
I don't think he'll stay up that late.
No, I'm guessing he's exhausted. What time are you on with Steve in the morning?
We teed up about 6. They go 6 to 10 now.
All right. Well, then go to bed. Get some rest, will you?
Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you. Coming up after this, we'll talk to a Democrat who was actually watching the coverage. We talked to two Republicans who were in Iowa. I feel bad because we'll be like, so Representative Martwick, what did it look like from your couch? But I think that's fair, right? That's how the rest of us watched
fine.
It. Yeah, I think so. That's how I saw it. Brandon was listening to it on the radio.
I was. I was purposely driving slow. I'm sorry. I was like 3 minutes late because I had to at least hear the end of what they were covering on Bernie.
And Brandon misremembered what station he was listening to. He heard it on WGN Radio.
The only radio station anyone should ever listen to.
That is correct, yes.
Correct. Wonderful response, Brandon. More with our Iowa caucus coverage after this on WGN 720. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting from the Allstate Showcase Studios West. I'm in Los Angeles for the week and been following a lot of the coverage out of Iowa. It sounds like everyone was so excited at the station. And on the line with us, we have Representative Robert Martwick, who we've been watching from home. You're our first guest who we've had on the line that got to watch it from the comfort of home and not from Iowa. What was your take on all the speeches tonight?
I think Iowa caucuses are always one of those things where anyone who finishes at or near the top, they feel very excited. You know, they're gonna move on, and their campaign's gonna, you know, this is gonna springboard them. So, you know, the Iowa caucuses have sometimes picked presidents, but not as often as you'd think. So it's interesting. Everyone's all very excited. Obviously, Trump was. His speech was a little different than what we've used to been seeing with him, but Hillary was fired up and Bernie's fired up. It's interesting to see them so close like that. It's obviously a moral victory for Bernie, but I just don't think he rolls it into anything past this.
Well, it is very close, though. I thought it was a little bit weird considering now they're only, what, 2/10 of a point apart, 49.85 and 49.65 last we heard out of Des Moines from Robert Martwick. I mean, Rob Martier.
Right.
Your names are too close to each other.
Yeah,
is it if the numbers turn around at all, is it going to be a little bit weird that she came out and took a victory speech?
I don't.
It's a little awkward.
I really don't think it matters. You know, I was looking at the fundraising, which of course is very interesting. Component of this. I was looking at it today, and of course, Bernie had a wonderful fourth quarter. He actually raised more money than everyone except for Hillary, which is amazing. Yeah, which is amazing because of the fact that he has, you know, he's not taking any PAC money. So he's, you know, he's raising all small donations. And, but even so, he's so late to the fundraising that he has no cash on hand. He's burning right through it all. Which means as he gets to the next states without any, you know, again, I don't know what the campaign's been doing, but if they haven't been building the infrastructure for the campaigns in these upcoming states, he's really going to be starting from scratch where Hillary has a pretty established network. And she has the second most cash on hand of any of the candidates in the race. I believe she had about $40 million on hand. Jeb Bush has $60 million on hand. I don't know what he's going to do with all that money.
Whoa!
Unless he thinks that he can dismiss this race, and you know perhaps he'll perform better in New Hampshire and move on, but he's got $60 million of cash on hand.
Well, what was your impression of the speeches? I mean, I listened to all five of them. As you mentioned, Trump's is a little bit different than we're used to from him, but it's still a little different from everybody else's, where it's still self-aggrandizing. And me, you know, which is just so weird.
I know it is. And, I think maybe when you look at the results, maybe that's what the Iowa voters finally came around to as they came into this. And again, you know, let's not forget that 4 years ago it was Rick Santorum who won this race. And, you know, the Iowa Republicans, it's such an interesting state because it's about 50-50 breakdown. And, you know, of course, you have two U.S. senators, one who is extremely conservative, one who is very progressive. So you have a state that's pretty well divided down partisan lines. But it is, as Pat Brady mentioned, I was listening to him, and this is a very fundamentalist Christian right. And so those candidates tend to do really well. And obviously that's something that Cruz does very well at. So I don't know if he's able to parlay this or not. Rubio, at a very close third, is surprising because I certainly think he's got a bright future as a Republican.
Well, there was something that Pat Brady mentioned was, and also Marco Rubio in his speech, is that conservatives are pretty divided right now, and they need to unify in order to have a strong front for this campaign. Is there a similar tone to the Democratic side? Is there any divisiveness? Is there contention among ideals? Because it doesn't seem that way to me. Universal health care, working for the middle class. Although Bernie Sanders does seem to talk a lot more about, well, it's time for, we've bailed out Wall Street. It's time for Wall Street to help the middle class.
Well,
but
there's no doubt, you know, obviously this is a campaign that, in both sides, is built on people's anger and fear as to what they see, what they perceive is going wrong with our country. And obviously they're taking two very different sides. So you look at the two candidates who are, well, I should say, you look at Ted Cruz at the top of the Republican ticket. I mean, here's a guy who his whole political career has been, his whole governmental career has been attacking the actual nature and structure of the government that we have. So it's kind of interesting that he wants to run it, right? All he's been doing is trying to tear it down. On the other hand, Bernie Sanders, again, probably in terms of Democrats, rather radical views. But again, they're speaking to those fears. And I think the message that comes out of this is that there are a lot of people who don't believe that Hillary is going to address that income inequality. I think on the Democratic side, you're looking at people and, you know, I hear people talk about this all the time. And that is, we believe that Bernie Sanders will tackle income inequality. We like Hillary, but we don't believe that she'll actually, you know, address that,
right,
that issue as well as Bernie will. And I, you know, and you can see she's trying to move to the left here to pick stuff up, even in her speech.
Yeah, she even said she was a progressive. Well, Representative, we have to run. We'll talk to you next week and catch up after the President Obama speaks to the General Assembly, if you don't mind. Love to hear what your
That'd
thoughts
be great.
Are.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks, Patty. Have a great night.
Thank you. That's Representative Robert Martwick. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.
To see the groundhog?
Yeah.
I think it'll be an early spring.
Didn't we do this yesterday?
I don't know what you mean.
Don't mess with me, pork chop. What day is this?
It's February 2nd. Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, I thought it was yesterday.
Oh.
That was by request from one of our listeners that we should be playing, because now it officially is February 2nd. And if I'm not mistaken, Nick DiGiglio will be doing his movie club at Movie Co. showing Groundhog Day. So now we have in the studio Brandon C. Price. Have you seen Groundhog Day?
I have several times. Classic.
When you watch it several times, I think watching it in a row would be confusing. I think I can only watch it once. And then,
yeah, I couldn't handle that in a row. That's a very good point.
Yeah, that would be sort of – Rick Overton's one of my favorite comedians. He's one of the guys he goes out for pancakes with.
Okay.
And they end up driving right into a train. That was one of those guys in the car with him. But how are you celebrating the Groundhog Day event?
You know, it's been overshadowed by the caucus. I completely forgot that was a thing.
You didn't do any of your Groundhog Day shopping? Didn't buy any
cards? I didn't. No. I didn't do any Groundhog Day dates, Groundhog Day festivities. I completely bailed on the holiday.
How did you skip the Groundhog Day festivities?
Wow. So sad.
And now the airing of grievances.
Yeah, we've been talking about the Iowa caucuses. I do still, if anyone has any thoughts, because we have been talking to our guests and we've been having a little conversation amongst ourselves, but we always welcome your thoughts and perspective at 312-981-7200 by text or by phone. And I'm just curious if there are people who just didn't give a rat's ass. I said it right there. Mm-hmm, don't care. Go ahead. You can tell us that. Or maybe you watched every single minute of it, didn't even want to leave your television to catch what was going on. I was a little bit of both. I was kind of like you, Brandon. I listened to some of it in the car, and then I also watched some of it on TV, listened to Rob Martier's coverage, a little bit of Justin Kaufman's conversation. I get excited by the political process. I think there are people who do. Would you say that you're a political animal, Brandon?
You know, only recently, and I think that probably happens to most people, the older you get, the more you realize how much it matters. I've always been a little disheartened and pessimistic about it, which is why I'm so excited about Bernie Sanders' message, whether or not he's actually got a shot to win. I just addressing campaign finance reform, making voting important and a holiday and a focus and a part of our education, and putting the power back into the people and getting into, like, you know, a little bit more of a democracy is so important to me that there are issues I very much disagree with him on, but I'm willing to overlook those a little bit because I think campaign finance reform is so important. And I think it's going to – I know a president doesn't have direct control over that, but, you know, what they're going to get 3 or 4 nominations to the court, like, coming up in this round. And you could really do something and actually change the way voting is handled and dealt with this country. And I just think – I can't imagine something more important than that.
Well, he also talked about our prison system and how it's overflowing right now. I mean, the number of people that are imprisoned and the ratio to which African Americans and Latinos are in prison. He's talking about, you know, that we need to provide opportunities instead of more prisons.
Well, yeah, just avoid privatized prisons. And I mean, like, how awful is that? People are making money the longer people are in jail.
Well, that was something I've been meaning to ask any one of our legislators. It's just something that keeps slipping my mind, and I shouldn't, since we have the opportunity to talk to them on a regular basis. Governor Rauner has mentioned an overhaul of our prison system in Illinois, and I'm wondering, you know, the state of Illinois has a contract, and the last I saw in an article was that there was a commitment to keep the prisons 90% occupied. Which means, like, that seems like a goal, right? Rather than
certainly, and there's a ton of money behind it, and the more money behind it, the more, you know, votes and judges and everybody are going to be influenced, and to keep people in prison and to keep things going that way. So it's cyclical. It's back to, like, again, campaign finance reform. But you're right. It's, you know, why would they stop having as full prisons as they could, build more prisons, because you're making all that much more money for those machines that create the clothes and the Aramark and the food and, you know, all these sorts of things. It's all fueled by more money and more money and more money. So the more people are incarcerated, the more they make.
Yeah, it has its own economy. Can I ask you, what are some of the things that you disagree with Bernie on? Because I know that there are some things that would probably jar conservatives. As far, you know, he was saying that Republicans won't admit to acknowledge the reality of climate change because that would mean all the money from the Koch brothers and big oil and big coal would go away. Is climate change one of the things that you agree or disagree with,
Patty? Well, I just want to tell you real quick, since you're not here to see it, you asked the question, what do you disagree with Bernie on? And Brandon made a very confused face.
Well, no, there are things. I was buried in my campaign finance reform soapbox. But I mean, climate change is certainly not one of them. I completely agree that we have to move away from oil and fossil fuel-based energy sources. Absolutely. He has my support 100% on that.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that because I think the tying it to climate change, maybe that's where things sort of fall apart. Can we agree that gas and coal and any of the big fossil fuels make the world dirty? Is that enough for us to go? I mean, you can see it in the air. You know when we have smog reports and levels that affect people's respiratory system. I mean, isn't that enough to go, there must be a better way to do this?
I mean, you know, my father, who's one of the people I respect the most and one of the smartest guys I'll ever meet, is on the other side than we are about climate change. It's just one of those facts that just takes a long time to permeate, and it's not only taking a long time to permeate because it does take generations to change minds, but also you have this driving force, those billions and billions and billions of dollars behind the oil industry that are keeping as much as they can misinformation and the argument still alive, which is a shame. But I cannot imagine that in this age of information, how quickly information can spread now, that science and fact, now that we've gotten to that point where it is science and fact, that will spread, and hopefully, you know, within a few years or decades or political cycles, that problem will go away and we'll focus more on different issues, because we have to go that way. We have to go that way. And I would be fine for, you know, I'd rather take an economic dip at this point, you know, dealing with the loss of cheap fossil fuels and having to go to more expensive clean energy and coming back on the other side of that with a cleaner planet, then, I mean, it's just it's a hard vote to make, because you are putting this entire globe before a lot of people's personal needs, whether it's financial with oil or just how cheap things is, cheap things are.
You know, Brandon says that we're in this age where people can communicate over the internet and all that technology and stuff, but we got a phone call from Fred in Iowa listening to good old radio. Look at
hey,
that. Look at
there
our
you go.
Reach.
There you go. Well, the internet has radio.
He was
this
at
radio.
The caucus.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hello there.
Hi. How was your caucus day?
Well, it was pretty nice. It was crowded, very crowded, very busy. I'm coming a little disappointed tonight because I was a Kasich supporter.
Oh, Yeah, a little bit behind, but he's not out yet, so that's promising. He's not done.
Yeah.
Oh, you do sound disheartened. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. It is a little disheartening. Yes. Yeah, but it was interesting. I was interested to see how Rubio did so well, specifically. Mm-hmm. I had expected Cruz to win just because in Iowa there's enough of a religious vote that I just would have been surprised if Trump had won. Actually, I was very surprised at how well Trump did, to be real honest. I thought Cruz would win by a little bit more.
What part of the state was your caucus in, Fred? Tell us the area you're in.
Northwest Iowa.
Northwest. Okay.
So, small county, Palo Alto County.
And when you were when you guys get locked in for your caucus, that's the way we've been told. You kind of everyone gets in and then the doors are locked. Nobody can leave. Is that accurate?
Well, I would imagine people can leave. But
I would hope
they don't let
yes.
anyone more in if they're not in. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no more in.
But it was.
Go ahead.
And it was, and they had an auditorium at the community college rented, and it was overflowing. I mean, I don't think they even had everyone in. It was kind of standing room only.
Wow. How many previous caucuses have you participated in?
I've participated in this is. I don't know if this would be my fifth or so, maybe something like uh-huh. that. I've been a few, but I've actually been in both the Democratic caucuses and the Republican caucuses. This is my uh-huh. second Republican caucus. The Democratic caucuses are a whole lot more fun.
Are they?
Wait, why are they? Why are they more fun? What makes them
because
more fun?
Because of the way they work, you have to actually join a side as you go. At the Democratic caucus, you go supporting one person, and then if your person doesn't have enough support. You have to support someone else. Is that right?
Yeah, and that is correct. Yeah, so there's actually and the ones that were at were actually a little bit smaller too. Whereas this Republican one was the entire county, the Democratic one was more local. So and there's just more interaction. You're trying to talk people over in your side because you count up. You know that say it takes five people to qualify for one delegate to the county convention, and you've got four. So you go try to talk someone else in to join you so you can get that extra delegate or whatever. And I don't know, a little more entertaining.
What are those conversations like? I mean, is there a barter or is there a little bit of a trade going on or is it just?
Well, sometimes, you know, you go over and you say, look, you've got one more person than you need. You know, I mean, you have to get four more people. You're in no way you're going to get four more people to come join to get a. But if just one of you will come over and join our group, we can get an extra, you know, extra delegate. And if. You can find someone on there that kind of likes your candidate. Maybe they'll switch over to you.
Are you allowed to have cookies, Fred, or are cookies a no-go?
yes. The Democratic one. I guess there were a few cookies laid out at the Republican one, but it was just a bigger kind of a less personal event.
You sound sad about that. I'm sorry because it is a community coming out and expressing the right to vote. What do you think drew so many people out? Because we're wondering if it is people came to vote against Donald Trump because he's been kind of this loudmouth and everyone's like, hey, wait a minute, our values don't lie. If this is the direction of the party, we want to make sure that we are heard.
I think there was some of that. I mean, and I think there were also some people who just were out because they wanted to support Trump, though, too.
Sure. I'm sure the numbers bear that out.
I wonder if some of the support coalesced around Rubio, just a little bit of it was perhaps an anti, front-runner vote. I'm not sure, on that one.
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead, Fred.
I was just going to say, I was really surprised at how well Rubio did here locally. I spoke with my brother, kind of interestingly, who lives down in the Des Moines area, and he said Rubio actually showed up at his caucus and spoke for a few minutes, and he said it just shifted the entire caucus. I mean, Rubio just walked away with the votes and delegates at that caucus.
Is so that allowed the day of for the candidate to show up? Because if that were true, I would just be driving around the state.
Obviously so.
Wow.
Obviously so. I honestly didn't know that myself.
Yeah, and follow-up question.
He was there at the caucus. Now the rule at the caucus is, on the Republican side, is that before you vote, each candidate, one person gets to speak on behalf of each candidate for 3 minutes. Well, in this case, they knew Rubio was coming, so they just held off, and he spoke for himself for the 3 minutes.
Wow. That's wild. I think Craig had a follow-up question. Go ahead.
I was curious if he also brought cookies. If Rubio shows up and he has cookies, then he has to be a shoo-in at that point. You can now see how I vote, by the way.
Yep, whoever has cookies has well, you know what we have for you, Fred? We've got a Lou Malnati's pizza because you are our on the boots on the ground, one of our caucusers. I don't know what you call yourselves, but you're Iowans who voted today in the caucus. So thank you so much for calling and telling us about that. And you can order LouMalnati's.com online and get a pizza sent to you frozen. It'll be delicious. Or when you come into Chicago, you can use it that way too. So hold on the line, and Craig will take your information. Absolutely. And our listeners can go to LouMalnati's.com. Over 40 locations in the Chicagoland area. More after this on 720 WGN.
And we are clear. We can talk again. And we probably interrupted a whole lot of that test because we can't hear it, WGN radio listeners. None of us, Patty, myself, and Brandon, can hear any of that.
It was just complete silence. I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. This is like what you're not supposed to do on radio.
Engineer, is a very intelligent guy, and he claims the test happened. So we all just believe him that happened.
Should we have made the noise?
No. We would have been doubling. Patty, you wanted to make the noise.
Raptors are attacking the station.
That is everyone.
This is not a test.
All raptors.
Wait, what's your impression of the test, Craig? Let's see what yours sounds like. Oh, yeah.
I think I was doing dial-up.
You've got mail.
Esmeralda? Oh, there you go. Esmeralda, what's your impression of the test?
Hers is far more aggressive.
This is a test.
No, I would feel warned, like something was about to happen.
Are you going to let Brandon do one?
Yeah, Brandon.
No, you guys covered it, man. That was really impressive.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's what we do.
Brandon, when we come back in a little bit, we'll talk some more about the caucuses or whatever anybody wants to talk about. But I do want to make sure we talk about Vamp and your new earlier show you're going to be doing on Friday night starting this week.
Yeah, it starts this week. It's very exciting. We've got the Vamp Comedy Cabaret, which will be 8 o'clock on Friday nights in February. We're testing it out, giving a little test run. It's the same lovely Vamp humans, a little more intimate, a little more sultry, just a pianist. We have a musical theater guest. Big musical theater and comedy names from around the city are coming in guesting. So just a couple of cabaret songs. And then, of course, there's your standard Vamp songs and jams, but more like duets to everybody. It's still BYOB, and it's only $15, and we're very, very excited about it.
Yeah, and you had a great weekend. I know Keenan was posting that you guys had sold out both shows this past week.
We did. We've actually sold out pretty – there's only been one show in January that hasn't been sold out. It's been excellent. I think our name is out there. I think everyone's really, really enjoying the show and telling people about it. We've just been around long enough for that system to start going through. We broke our attendance record on Saturday by a significant amount, an amount I probably shouldn't put out there because imagine – fire code allowed us to do it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a situation Craig and I saw at a venue. Let's say it wasn't during Sketchfest, but we've all kind of made jokes about it. So have Tim and Micah. It was just a packed house. I think that people in January are really seeking out this winter in particular, seeking out ways to just release. You know,
well, absolutely. So, and you see it across the board in Chicago theater, at least Chicago comedy theater, what I have my thumb on. And it's winter. It gets cold. And November and December, it really slows down, and you're just trying to get through the holidays. And then after New Year's, a pretty much straight ramp from January to the end of March, that's when people come see theater because they're used to getting out in the cold for 5 minutes, but nobody's still going out and doing anything. You have to go inside. So this is when all theaters kind of bump up, but we've really been blessed just by our fan base and how it's growing, and it's very exciting.
Well, everyone should get out and see Vamp, and we'll talk some more after this on Pretty Little Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studios West. We wish you a very happy Groundhog's Day. Nick DiGilio has Groundhog Day at his movie club tonight at Movie Co. And the movie is at 8. I bet they'll be having dinner and drinks at 7 o'clock. And we've got Brandon C. Price in the studio with us hanging out. Did you get the article that I sent you about
genetic? Yes, I did.
Yeah, so in Britain, they have given the go-ahead to sort of manipulate DNA to genetically modify human embryos. Now, it will be illegal to implant them in a woman, but they're saying that this is a way to understand the very beginnings of life, which that makes sense, because if you can understand the beginning, maybe, you know, develop a deeper understanding and sort of be able to choreograph things as diseases develop, can you find the source of it? If you go all the way back to the beginning, but it is kind of sci-fi a little bit. I mean, there are movies about this kind of stuff.
Gattaca.
Well, for sure. I mean, because it's going to eventually lead to a place where you're going to run into discoveries that could only happen if you did implant these things, if you did almost create life for the purpose of science. Because right now, like you said, at the beginning of life, they're studying on. I mean, all, you know, miscarriages and infertility. It's very common, but nobody really – science hasn't nailed down why that happens so much. So I think that's – I was reading that article is a little bit more where they're focused on, like you said, the beginning of life. But when do you get to – well, now, would you like your kid to have blue eyes or brown eyes? Would you like them to be particularly athletic or very quick at math or whatever? And where's the – I think that's why it gets a little sci-fi, like, ooh, because eventually we're going to get to that point.
Well, and I know that there are people who feel strongly about embryos and, you know, what happens because the researchers will alter the genes in donated embryos, which will then be destroyed after 7 days. So they are not – I mean, they're not providing an environment where they would be able to survive. But, you know, they're doing it all in the name of science. I mean, there are genetic alterations that they've been able to make in China where they were able to carry out gene editing to correct a gene that causes blood disorder. I mean, if there are things where we can prevent suffering, but, you know, that's not like all they're going to do. Like you said, if somebody wants a kid with blonde hair and blue eyes or blonde eyes and blue hair, I don't know.
Well, it's where you draw that line and what your belief is on that. I mean, it's like stem cells, you know. Or cloning even. Let's say I have a heart disease and I need a new heart, and we have the technology to make a genetic replica of me so I could have his heart and continue to live. Like, is that wrong? Is the blue eye color wrong? Or is changing even the blood disorder wrong?
Well, and we have to trust that there are, you know, there are scientific regulations. You know, I guess that's the part you have to have faith in is one way. And then I know that people get so nervous when you say regulations. But, you know, this is kind of goes again what we're talking about in Iowa tonight. You know, where are the restrictions in every part of our lives, right? Do we restrict scientific research when it comes to embryos? Do we restrict the, you know, people don't want restrictions on the free market. We don't want restrictions. Hey, look what happened in Michigan where there wasn't somebody, you know, following through and making sure that the water supply was clean. There were no guidelines apparently in place to make sure that, hey, when the water starts turning brown, why don't you do something about that?
Preventative guidelines and protective guidelines like that make sense to me. But how do you draw the line on how you limit science progression?
Right.
Because that's what drives technology. It's almost, you know, another form of evolution, really. We stopped physically evolving because we were able to now adapt our surroundings more than we'd have to adapt to them. But with technology, that came from us mentally. It grew from an idea. And so now we're almost in this, like, techno-evolutionary stage where maybe we'll all become superhuman or maybe we'll all cure Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and all these things with stem cells, with embryo research. And is it against nature, or is it literally just the next step in nature?
Right, because so much of the technology and research and progress that we have made has helped, you know, whether there are people who, you know, with limbs and the way they're able to develop the technology to help people walk again, you know, spinal cord injuries when they're in, I mean, there are instances where they're starting to use robotics and sort of, you know, that idea of, you know, when they do brain mapping and are able to sort of tap into that and, you know, people are able to articulate limbs through messages sent through an electrical you know, connection. Yeah, I mean, at what point is there that blend of technology and human evolution that you're talking about? And when is it just used for helping, and when is it used for enhancing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the nanobots that's going to really change it. It's when they can create tiny little robot cells and little robot neuroreceptors, and then we're all pretty much invincible and immortal at that point.
Okay.
Oh, now you're freaking me out. Nanobots.
No, I take it. I take being immortal and invincible.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, awesome. Probably the richest however many percent of people that can afford this crazy thing will be invincible and just amass more and more and more wealth.
I feel like Brandon's writing a sci-fi novel.
I'm just, yep. Maybe I'm just Notre-Dame-ing this whole situation.
Well, then the very creative and scientifically minded who are not billionaires will have like sort of the rough and tumble nanobots.
Oh, you're right.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
They'll be the cool guy who built his own nanobots in his basement.
Yeah, they make you immortal, but you turn blue. So there's a new race of immortal blue people.
Avatar.
It's a drawback. Yeah, Avatar. We all
finally.
This sounds so great. I want to live in this future.
I don't know. Would you want to live? I mean, you know, at what point are we artificial intelligence when you're just able to download your, you know, everything that you know and have experienced and remember onto a hard drive, and then you live?
Yeah, that you can access your memories. Think if you could play back all your memories like movies on your phone. So you
okay, wait a minute,
have everything.
Just because all this technology existed doesn't mean that every single person would have to opt into it, right? So maybe I don't want that, what you just said, remembering everything that's ever happened to me.
I think if for a few generations, there will still be muscle car owners. As cars now drive themselves and they're all electric, there will still be people that hang on to gasoline-fueled vehicles.
Sure.
But for only so long. So you can hang out and,
no,
you know.
No, that's not the same argument, though. Actually, modifying myself is a little bit different than giving up my muscle car.
For sure, but my point is, it just in general, as more and more of the populace does it, because if I modify myself and I can run 10 times faster and I can smoke 2 packs a day and be totally healthy and I can eat cheeseburgers and have a 6-pack, you're not sitting there going, huh. And maybe you don't, but the next generation sees even double the people who have done it. And then 3 or 4 generations down the line, 90% of us sitting here with 6 packs and cheeseburgers, and your grandkids are going, what the heck were we thinking?
Yeah, but then, I apologize, Patty, we're just kind of arguing.
Wow.
Now, but,
no, go.
No,
go.
But I'm confused as to how you're connecting the dots there, because then when we talk about modifying my brain specifically and doing things that might affect my personality, that's where I might draw the line. If I want to run really fast, hey, great, that sounds cool. I'll put on bionic legs and I'll jump a building. But the moment that we start modifying our brains is where some people might say, this could change who I am. This could change my personality. Like Patty said, if you remember everything, if you're a robot that can download any sort of information you want into your brain, maybe some people will see that as a moment to, and this is an insane future we're talking about, by
the
way.
It's, I mean, exponential growth of technology.
Say,
it could be.
That's too, well, I mean, Michio Kaku came on Milt Show a few years ago and said that we're going to have
a
contact that you put in your eye that has a computer in it.
Yep.
So once we get to that point, and that's not really that far away, all the information that's on our phone will be in our eye.
Although as much as you say that you know, that whatever is going to, we're going to change our brains and all that, technology, I think, already has changed our brains. I mean, you've seen it. We have a whole generation of kids who are just kind of antisocial,
but
don't know how to, like, interact with human beings.
But that's the detrimental effect of current limitations on technology. So we've been sucked out of our real lives and now it's force-fed into this Facebook world, which you're absolutely right about. But we're these slumped over, squinty-eyed people now because of these phones. As soon as you program it straight into my head, I can stand back up and look around again and make it even
easier.
But
honestly, isn't the internet? The internet is full of information. You'd think these people would be the smartest people ever because everything's at their fingertips.
Plus,
but
I don't know.
They're not.
I don't know if we can ignore the stuff if it's in our brains, because as Patty and I know from a story last week, if you try to pay attention to one thing while trying to do something else, you can't.
Yeah, dude, that's with a brain without nanobots, Craig.
Oh, there you go. That's what the nanobots are for.
You got to download that app.
I don't know. I think at the end of your day, I'm playing devil's advocate, and I think you're right. I don't know. I'm just not going to trust a computer in my head. Even if it didn't, said it wasn't going to change me, what if you're really good at computers and you hack into my head with your iPhone?
See?
Watch these guy. I'm going to make him dance around in the mall.
He's my meat puppet. Oh, that just sounded wrong. More after this on 720 WGN. No one told you that was gonna be this way. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studios West. As many of you know, producer Craig Collins hosts his own podcast, You've Binge Challenged. And actually, our co-host tonight, Brandon C. Price, has participated with the series Lost. And did you guys ever, what was the debate on Lost? What was the conversation? Was it because I enjoyed the finale, and that's something you and I disagree about, Craig.
Yeah, no, that was... Unfortunately, sometimes when I really don't like the ending to a show, I focus a lot on that. So the podcast became how good of a show was it in after seeing the finale and knowing what the overarching message is, and then whether or not you can draw your own conclusions. Because Brandon and I talked about what he thought the finale meant, and I told him what the writers actually said it meant and how that I couldn't get over that.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. And you enjoyed doing
Brandon's
it.
Brandon's mic's not on.
Oh, Brandon, join the conversation.
I do something?
Yeah, you can.
Hey, it's me.
Hey, buddy.
No, I will say, after we had that debate and you told me what the real point from the writer's point of view was, and I went back and watched it under that umbrella and filter, I enjoyed it more the second time.
Really? You liked it watching it through again?
Yeah, there were times when I was upset with you for making me go back through it all.
You didn't have to watch
all
of it.
But no, it's a good show.
Yeah, it's a good show, and it was entertaining, but the finale is very disappointing to some of us.
It doesn't go well with their point throughout the whole other rest of the thing. Because if their point is no religion, no anything based, it's this is just a magical world.
Well,
then what are you doing just quitting on me?
Patty, did you watch it while it was happening? Were you one of the fans of the show as it was going? Okay, so one of the things that really frustrated me is after the first, say, three seasons, they kept doing interviews, the creators of the show.
They would do recaps too.
Yep.
They would do
montages. Oh, thank you.
Right.
I mentioned this very briefly in that podcast. They did a recap show before Lost. It was so popular that they did a show every week that was the episode prior with little pop-up kind of conversations of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For the first three seasons, they told us all those things that were happening had a point. There were going to be answers to all the questions. And then as it went on and they demonstrated that maybe they're not the best writers or that was too challenging of a task they put before themselves, oops, we can't answer all the questions, but that's really what the show's about.
I just never retained any of that information when I see the interview. Like, oh, what? Look at they're talking.
Whatever, they're saying words.
There are a lot of loose threads, but you could kind of say, like, well, maybe that's probably because of that, but when they come out and say, don't make your own inferences, this is what's happening, but we're not giving you half the answers, it kind of leaves you in a hard place.
Yeah.
Well,
speaking of you've been challenged, we actually, I believe, at least I am now feuding with another show on this radio station, which is cool. We're at our first feud-ish.
Here's the problem with the feud, right? About whether or not Seinfeld or Friends is a better comedy.
True.
The problem is that it's a personal taste, right? I don't enjoy Seinfeld. It never struck a chord with me. I would sit down and just be like, well, these people are just assholes. And I don't enjoy hanging out with assholes, and I just turn it off.
Yeah.
You know, the people on Friends are selfish, and they're, you know, they're misguided, and they embark on ridiculous things, and I was charmed by them. And I enjoyed watching them. People were annoyed by Chandler. I thought he was the kind of guy I would have dated in college. I think that's what I liked about the show was that it reminded me of my college dorm and the absurd things that everyone I knew, you know, did. The people on Seinfeld, I wouldn't hang. Why, if I won't hang out with them, why would I watch them? Well, I guess they're, you know.
And the big reason that I compared the two shows was first that they did air around the same time. They were part of the NBC Thursday night must-watch TV block that was so popular. And I think they're definitely two of the most well-recognized shows that came out of that time period in that block. And then, as you said, Patty, there's definitely pros and cons to both of them. I actually admitted on the podcast that they're both amazing comedic shows. I just also prefer Friends to Seinfeld because of some of the stuff you just said. And I also do think that continuity and having a episode-to-episode message that kind of existed through the entire run of the series is a little bit more difficult to pull off and to stand as popular as it's been, to stand that kind of test of time as well as it has, compared to Seinfeld, which being really funny episode to episode, didn't actually have to worry about a message beyond a certain, you know, beyond that 25 minutes. After that, they could just refresh to the next Jerry Seinfeld stand-up bit turned into an episode of television. And they did a really great job. They did a lot of social commentary. They satisfied the zeitgeist, all stuff we said in the podcast. If you listen for more, you know, then a minute or two and say that the podcast could last for longer than that.
I'm not a fan of Seinfeld.
Yeah,
I like Jerry Seinfeld. I saw him on, he was on the Daily Show the other day, and I enjoyed him. I'm amused by him, but I'm not drawn in by the show. It never was.
Right, and I think Seinfeld's a show that a lot of people could just watch casually in the background because it's
yes.
None of the episodes, you can just watch one episode, and if it's on and running in syndication. But the thing about Friends is if you're actually paying attention to the show, you need to kind of give it a little bit more of your attention, I think. I don't know how better to say that.
I just find them – to me, they're more interesting. But that's the thing about personal taste is that you get to be drawn to whatever it is that's – you know, that's why there's 1,000 TV channels out there because we're not all going to watch the same things.
I also like taking the minority opinion, which is definitely what I did by saying that Friends is a better show than Seinfeld. And it was fun to have that conversation with Tim Barnes and Eric Niederowski.
What did Tim preferred Friends?
Tim stayed in the middle for the most part, but said that Friends might be a better show than Seinfeld because of the Phoebe character, because she was a very specific type of 90s character that didn't exist in Seinfeld and did exist in Friends. And there was a lot more progressive ideas coming out of the Friends episodes than maybe Seinfeld had. Well, Seinfeld made a lot of socially funny, you know, commentary jokes for the time period it was in. Friends might have actually addressed some issues that were a little more risque or touchy at the time period that they were.
Well, the episode I liked the most of Seinfeld was Master of Their Domain. And I mean, you know,
it's
but
funny.
Like you said, it's consumable and then you're done. And that's the one that sticks out for me. And I saw the series finale and I think that summed it up just fine, that they're all selfish. And so are the people on Friends. The kind of absurd situations that they all got themselves into were different tones. And again, it's just that's a different taste.
Right. And like you said,
I certainly don't get angry at people for liking Seinfeld. And I don't know why people get angry at someone for liking Friends.
Well,
it just seems a little judgmental.
Like you said as well, there were moments that Friends was able to create because their group actually cared about each other. There were nice kind of sweet moments that happened in the show that probably did not happen as often in Seinfeld.
A little more of a support system. And to go back to watching assholes, there are plenty of shows where I like assholes. Like Nurse Jackie, I think she's a, you know.
Yeah.
But more of a drama tone, even though it's considered
House.
To be a house.
House is a show where I really like an asshole.
House of Cards.
So, House of Cards. Men's asshole. How many times can we say that?
We're pushing boundaries.
We're pushing the limits.
Well, thank you. I wanted to discuss this. Thanks, Patty.
No, I did. Well, I always notice this, like when I'm a big fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? And people would harass me about, how can you like that show? It's so stupid. Why are you so angry about that? It's a show that I don't know what.
We
talked about this before, you know, sort of coming down hard on somebody for enjoying a particular type of entertainment. I mean, you know, I understand like getting into a contentious argument over something more substantial, but not over a television show.
No, and I'm excited more than anything else that we're now feuding with another show. That's kind of exciting for me. We've got to do some sort of smackdown at some point.
I challenge the notion that that you know somehow you are
have
less
a quote
of a person.
Off.
A quote off.
Yeah, who can just like no internet, no Twitter, no help. Who can like who's the real fan? Who speaks up for their show?
I think
more?
We would actually lose that specific competition because Nick D is a huge fan of Seinfeld, so I'm sure he's got a lot of quotes.
It's valid, and they're both very quotable shows.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I'm just excited that I remember Insane Troll Logic from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is
that
what this
impressive.
Conversation seems to be. Thank
that
you very
was
much.
Nice.
And I do think Meat Puppet is from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay, I was trying to Google Meat Puppet, and you shouldn't do that.
Fair
Image
enough.
Results? No!
No, why? I'm at work.
See, I'm a little bit envious of Esmeralda because she's come to Buffy late, you know, when the show was on like that. I mean, there was a comedian named Renee Hicks who was just went on and on about my lack of intelligence for liking Buffy. And why is this really what you're basing your entire opinion of my personality on?
Right. Yeah. It's really just one thing that I like. I also like smart things, if that's what you think.
Yeah, well, Joss Whedon's a great writer anyway. That's Buffy, right?
It is.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I was never a Buffy fan, but to be fair, I just never gave it a chance, and I trust you. but yeah, even if it wasn't smart writing or a smart show to watch or whatever, everyone's entitled to their guilty pleasure show. I mean, look how many people watch The Bachelor instead of The Caucus tonight. I'm not judging them. I hope they vote, but I'm not judging them.
Yeah, I'm more disappointed in them, that's all. I mean, it's not interesting to some people to watch the results on CNN. But I thought it was very interesting. Esmeralda, I know you're about to do the news. So maybe I should just go to the news rather than ask her if we have any updates on the numbers. But yeah, so there you go, Craig. I got your back on that. That's fine. I don't
Patty, you were the best person ever.
Well, I don't like Seinfeld. I also have trouble, like, I have a hard time saying out loud that I don't like The Simpsons either. It's not, like, not like. If it's on, I don't get upset about it.
Right.
I'm like, well, oh, there's that show again.
Yeah, everything I just said about not being mad at someone for not liking something, I take back.
See?
If it's current Simpsons, though, that's fine. Current Simpsons is terrible.
Do not like it now?
Yeah, it's awful. Early Simpsons is pretty good, though.
I remember a... I remember a previous producer, let's call him Keith because that was his name, was very excited about the marathon.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just couldn't – I thought he was going to have excitement pee. He was so excited about it.
Who does live TV anymore? Like, who – like, a marathon on TV means nothing because I can binge watch anything online.
Right.
That's true.
Right, yeah, that binging was capable at any time.
Yep. And it's always great. Patty, season 7. That's all I'll say. It's like an all-star greatest hits of The Simpsons. Maybe if you don't, I mean, just to anyone else who's on the fence. Patty's made up her mind. I respect that. But if you're on the fence about Simpsons, sit through season 7.
See, but I don't think there's anything wrong with you for liking it.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
You know what, though? I do judge people who, like, I remember a friend of mine who really wanted to go see a live taping of the Jerry Springer show. And I was like, oh. So I guess I do have that. But I try to rein it in and acknowledge that I'm judging somebody for their tastes. Okay. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio West. I'm in Los Angeles for work this week, but I'll be broadcasting every night. And as you know, WGN Radio is covering the Iowa caucus. This morning, Steve Cochran was on the air with many guests, as he's on location, as is Ro Khan. And I heard Steve Bertrand was – if you could hear what a man sounds like if he – wished he could be skipping instead of sitting down to talk. That's what Steve Bertrand sounded like this morning. He was so giddy about the caucus, which was fun to hear about. Now, you are a fan, Brandon C. Price, of Bernie Sanders, and you were just texting me that there is a question about one of the precincts in Polk County, Iowa, where there were 9 delegates to be had, and they gave 5 to Hillary and 4 to Bernie Sanders, and they're saying now that the count made – they did it over and over again with a different result every time. Now, this is not the Clinton – you know, this is not her people. I mean, these are her people, but it's not her. These could be very excited, you know, I guess, precinct captains who feel strongly about their candidate. But this could be interesting as the race is at 49.8 with Hillary in the lead to Bernie Sanders 49.6. That could make a difference. And if there's any other question of fraud throughout the state, I wonder if they're going to call any of the other ones into question.
Surely they will. I mean, have you also seen the coin toss thing? The 6 precincts, I think it's up to 6 precincts now, have been decided by coin toss. And they've all 6 of them have gone to Hillary. And
what?
A coin toss.
Damn those math odds.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, that's so
weird.
That's
a little weird.
Real quick, before we talk too much more about conspiracy, Susan's on the line. She wants to make a comment about Friends, Seinfeld, and great TV.
Okay. Love to hear that. Hi.
Yes, I was listening to your show. I just want to make a comment that although I believe that Jerry Seinfeld's one of the most brilliant comedians on the planet, it's the group that makes a great show. Whatever
right.
the show is, it's the It's you get the right people that just happen to get that, like the old Dick Van Dyke show. It's that group together that, like with Seinfeld and with Friends, that they interact. Like
right.
in the old, all the great shows, it seems like, have that the right combination of players that seem to. And for me, you know, despite Jerry Seinfeld being very funny, it's that whole group together. Now, I didn't like the ending, but, you know, I loved so many episodes of the show. And the same thing with the Friends and Phoebe. And but it's that group. And Dick Van Dyke, you can't get better than those old shows.
I love that your comparison is I love that there's a stretch in between, a gap between Dick Van Dyke, Seinfeld, and the sort of the Friends-Seinfeld comparison. I agree. I love the Dick Van Dyke show. And again, like those characters, like, Sally and you know his wife and Dick Van Dyke and their boss. Everybody has there's a certain allure to them. Like I'm drawn to those characters. I don't like George Costanza. I didn't like the characters. You know what I mean? Like they weren't people I felt like I wanted to spend time with. And one of our listeners texted too that I'm mad at them for being. I just don't enjoy them. I agree. I think they're very talented and together they were a wonderful cast.
And then we got a few more text messages from the 630. I like American American Ninja Warrior. Is that wrong?
That's cool.
Nothing's wrong with that.
And then another 630, 77-year-old retired teacher here, loved Buffy and Angel. Great shows.
Hey.
Never missed them. Friends over Seinfeld as well. I watched both every week.
See?
Nice.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, there we go.
You guys have a bigger following than you thought you did for your opinion.
Well, and I think that that's, but you know, there are people who disagree with us and they may not feel like this is a compelling enough conversation to join. But like I said, we had a tweeter who said that never thought of thinking which is better. Seinfeld has four comedians. I guess that's true. I don't know what, who's the actor who plays George Costanza? I don't think that he was a comedian. I think he was an actor.
He was a more musical theater. Jason Alexander was a musical theater for a long time. He did music.
Right.
But no, not Music Man. Bye Bye Birdie. He's done a lot of stage stuff, too.
Yeah, Julie Louis-Dreyfus trained in Chicago in sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And the tall one, Kramer. see how compelled I was to show the tall guy with the curly hair. And
Michael Richards.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. That guy got a little bit of trouble afterwards for trying to do stand-up, which was not his skill set. He was also a sketch comic. And it's a different muscle to exercise, to stand on stage and talk to an audience than sort of being in a scene and working
Patty,
with other actors.
Quick question about that. When you're kind of new to stand-up comedy, the thing that Michael Richards got in so much trouble about was saying some really horrible things. Is there a temptation on stage, if you're new at it, to think, okay, I really have to get people laughing and maybe I'll just be insane. Maybe I'll just say crazy, you know, risque stuff because I don't have enough material or enough experience to fold anything else. Do you see some comedians maybe even just, you know, using bad language if they don't have the material or the skill set to do something better? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about dealing with an audience is that it also has to be true to the type of persona you are on stage, and that takes years to develop. I don't think I've ever seen anybody handle it right out of the gate. I mean, because you have to have a tremendous amount of confidence to stand alone on stage and just go from a monologue. So when you are drawn into a situation with the audience, that's not something you can practice. It's something that happens along the way, and your reaction to it is based on experience. Now, he had the benefit of being a celebrity, and also that's a drawback because he also becomes a target when something like that does happen. If any other comic had done that, and I'll tell you something, it does. You know, and sometimes it ends up on social media, whether it's a comic making rape jokes or calling a woman the C word or using the N word. Sometimes it ends up online. But for the most part, that just disappears and nobody ever knows that it happened. But because he's a celebrity and people taped it, it becomes a different story. And it's a shame. I mean, he didn't have the chops to handle it.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. And when it went out there, obviously a lot of people's opinions of him changed. They thought one thing about him because of the show and how beloved that character is, and then that comes out and you think, well, this guy's a terrible person.
You can still love the character and respectfully don't care for Michael Richards.
Right. I just kind of shrugged and went, oh, there's that guy.
I'm a big fan of Barry Bonds' body of work. He was an incredible player for a long time. The guy's a terrible human. Well, McGuire didn't cheat. McGuire did Andros or whatever because it wasn't illegal. And if it's not against the rules, why wouldn't you do it? I don't blame McGuire.
I don't know what else to say to him, Patty. Yeah, we just
changed. What do you? I mean, how can you fault the guy? That's not against the rules.
Did he just do Andro, or did he take human growth hormone and everything else? And
I mean, he straight up said, "I took a bunch of that crap, but I wasn't supposed to not, or wasn't not." You know what I mean?
Yes.
I feel like, Patty, some of those were definitely against the rules. Some steroids were
not.
No,
he came out that year, though, I thought. I might be misinformed for sure, and that would change my opinion completely.
Yeah. I don't think that any sport was like, hey, it's cool. You guys want to do human growth hormone.
If
totally
it's not
fine.
In the contract, man, you can't hold me to it.
I think he's doing human growth hormone in there, Patty. I think he's doing some.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
That's why I look so awesome.
There's no rules.
Patty, how do you feel about the steroid era in baseball? You're a huge baseball fan. How do you feel?
Well, it's funny. I remember watching that season with Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire from the home run.
Oh, yeah.
And this is another thing. Like, I wasn't a fan of Sammy's. I'm a Cubs fan. There was something about him I wasn't drawn to. This is such a weird thing that you're learning about me tonight. If I don't like you, I'm just not that interested. I wasn't that into it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was exciting. What did it get to? 72 homers that season?
Yes, they had to break the record of 61, and then they eventually, I think,
yeah, they both slammed over it.
Mark McGuire hit 70, I believe. That was the record.
70.
Until
yeah, I believe it was. You're right.
Barry
70.
Bonds hit Barry, more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. I mean, I would watch games just to see, you know, where we were. But I think that we drive our athletes to that. I was talking to somebody who had played football in high school, and he found out that, like, when you get to a certain level, the assumption is you just start taking stuff to enhance your performance. And I think that we, you know, our expectations of our sports heroes, kind of create this false reality for them, and the what is right and wrong becomes sort of slippery.
Well, there's so much money in sports too that if you were right on that cusp, if you're a high school kid that is just good enough to maybe be considered for something, it would be really hard to not.
For sure, that competitive gene, that drive that people have to be competitive, whether it's Monopoly with your family or the Super Bowl. I mean, you do get people headed towards drugs and doing those types of things, which are now against the rules. But you also get your Brett Favre's and your workhorses and your real true sports heroes that don't ever quit from the same drive. So you get good and bad out of it. And I mean, I don't know how anything that's based financially on competitiveness, you would ever get away from that, because you're going to take every opportunity you can to win.
Absolutely. And when you, and especially when it does start that young, why would the rules be any different as you get older? You know, you start getting away with it, and it's encouraged and protected by some people. People turn the other, they turn the other way, or they encourage it. But so I don't, how do we end up on sports? I don't know.
It was Brandon's fault. He changed the topic.
Now you called me out on something.
You said that you liked Barry Bonds.
So back to Michael Richards. I love Kramer. I don't like Michael Richards.
Full circle, Patty. Nailed it.
Boom.
Full
Iowa caucus.
Circle. All right. More after this on 720 WGN. We'll straighten it all out. It's pretty late. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are still caucusing Brandon C. Price. I see another article from the Des Moines Register saying there are now precincts that are actually unaccounted for some Democratic precincts in Iowa, and they have contacted the campaigns of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders asking for their help tracking down the missing results. Wait, so in this, yes.
How do you... I'm sorry?
The campaigns are not directly reporting results to the party, but they are helping find the temporary caucus chairs of a small number of outstanding precincts.
There's also reports of a couple of precinct captains being actually out of state paid staffers from one of the campaigns, which I haven't seen validated on any main news source, but it's all over Twitter.
Well, the Sanders Iowa campaign coordinator says he doesn't question the integrity of the state party, but he said their last-minute scramble probably means many caucus chairs weren't properly trained on how to report their voting results.
Mm-hmm. It's all convenient, isn't it? It's all convenient.
And where it's significant in a race this close, in particular for a candidate like Bernie Sanders, is the momentum, right? It's having that, whether it's a narrow victory, a moral victory, an actual victory, is, that momentum going into New Hampshire, stirring the hearts and minds. Now, did you listen to Hillary Clinton's speech at all?
I did. I listened to, again, they cover about the first 5 minutes of it, and then they start talking about their own coverage. But I did hear it. It was very victorious.
It was very big. She has this way of speaking that is a little strident.
She's so impersonal.
Yeah.
That's a personal opinion. It has nothing to do with politics, and I would never hope to elect our president on that. But it is jarring.
It is a little bit. Well, and Bernie Sanders kind of cracks me up a little bit. By the way, whenever I hear Bernie Sanders talk, I do think of Larry David, which is
to not draw that parallel.
Yeah,
the internet helps with that.
It really does. And our follower on Twitter, Rob, pointed out that he was Larry David was a stand-up comic. I don't know if Jerry Stiller was a stand-up, but I think he's definitely a comedic performer. There were a lot of talented people on. Did I ever say that anybody was? I think there's a difference between saying a show is bad and saying I don't like a show. Can we make that distinction?
Yeah.
I think that something can be – I don't like The Big Short. Everybody seems to think that's a great movie. Obviously, it's nominated for Best Picture of the Year. I didn't like it.
Neither one of us likes Making a Murderer, but apparently people like that.
This is
what I'm
saying.
Hadn't got into that one.
It's really not. It takes a little bit, I think.
Do you ever very sillily find yourself just almost refusing to get into something because everyone talked about it on the same day one time?
I've never seen Titanic. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what happens.
Yeah, I know what happens, and everybody likes it so much.
Yeah.
But does he know the extent?
Good job,
Esmeralda.
We're the only ones.
I feel like we've talked about that before in the show. Yes, good job.
Stay true to yourselves. I say never see it.
Yeah,
you're
no,
in this
never.
Deep. No,
I mean,
never.
Esmeralda, have you seen pretty much all of it on TV from time to time?
I've seen the last bit.
That's all you need.
But I've never thought, like, oh, I want to sit down and watch this.
What do you consider to be the last bit when she's throwing the jewel back into the ocean?
The boat part.
Oh, the part where she doesn't move over?
Yeah. Or let him, like, balance himself on top of her.
Well, now we're talking science and buoyancy. That wasn't going to hold both of them.
No, that big old door. Just couldn't fit both of them.
Brandon, I've talked about this on the show before. I had nightmares for whatever reason. I like the idea of a watery death bothered me when I saw that movie. And so I kept having dreams and kept trying to think of different ways to find a solution. And the last time I had a dream, I grabbed an axe. Remember, they have an axe they're running around with. And I started chopping doors off their hinges and giving people doors to run to the water with so that there were more people that could survive.
That was really nice of you to chop down more than one door.
Oh, yeah.
Even in your dream.
No, in my dream, I was trying to get as many doors as possible.
Yeah, why weren't you on the Titanic, Patty? That's a great idea. One
they
door
had
worked
so
for one
time.
Person.
The door lady, we gotta go.
No one else used a door.
Yeah, man. I only knew about it because of Rose. That's all.
Right. In retrospect, now whenever anything's going down, I'm gonna find doors.
Mm-hmm.
Find a door.
Way to go.
Do you guys
on the bus or on a plane? Almost, I don't get nervous on these things, but the first thing I do is sit down and go, all right, what's my plan? All right, that lady's getting in everybody's way. She's on the aisle of the exit. I'm going to have to choose myself over her. I'm going to, I'm going to grab this bag. I'm going to, this flotation device. Do you make those plans and escape routes?
Yes. Diving underneath seats. Mm-hmm. Who do I fall under to play dead?
Yep.
Yes, I've had.
I'm surprised you even had to ask Patty, as she has a go bag at all times.
I have a go bag.
Oh, my cars are like totally go. Yeah. In fact, I actually got upset. I was driving the other day on a one way, taking some people home from rehearsal, and a guy was in the middle of the road, broken down. And I got out and I was like, hey, you know, you're in the middle of the road. He's like, well, I ran out of gas, and I always have 5 gallons of gas in my car, right next to 5 gallons of water and food and supplies for days. Because when it goes down, Craig, you won't be laughing.
Saying, listen to this. We are kindred spirits, you and I, Brandon C. Price.
Absolutely. Oh, 5 gallons?
I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but I'm a realist and I'm a preparator.
Not just like 1 gallon of gas.
Silly.
I'm a silly preparator.
We're gonna be as silly as we can here.
I just do the hand prayer thing.
Yeah, I
What's
like that.
That called? I'm awful. What is that called? You know, when you do the up down,
the cross.
Yes,
the sign.
Spectacles, tentacles, wallet, and watch.
Wow.
We should have let Esmeralda
Ted Cruz
keep
would not
it.
Like. Ted Cruz would not like you in his campaign in the Judeo-Christian free market that he's about to run.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
With the up down.
Yeah, with the up down.
I know how to do it. I just don't know the name of it.
Well, we'll see what my 5 gallons of gas and water gets with your Ted Cruz move, and we'll see who wins.
Well, when I float out of wherever I am,
on a door.
Pause and not call the sign of the cross Ted Cruz's move?
I don't know, man. I don't
feel like it came around before he did.
Yeah, but he's like making it cool.
Yeah. He's making it part of the presidency. Hey, Brandon. I have a question about where was that car? Because we saw a car that wasn't going anywhere, Craig. Do you remember when we were heading to the IHOP the other night?
Yeah.
There was
the IHOP like on Broadway?
No, it's an IHOP up more north. It's off of Peterson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was a car that like was just in the middle. But it wasn't in the middle of the street, though. It was at a light that just never – it was very strange. It's
sometimes you fall asleep at a light.
I guess. So it's a good thing you have snacks to keep you awake.
Yeah.
That is key. That can be key. Oh, man. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
Well, you know, this actually can all come full circle to a story you sent us, Patty, about falling asleep in your car. There's a new product that helps you to fall asleep in the back seat, right?
I am so excited about this. There's a mattress, Brandon and Esmeralda, that you can blow up, and it fills that gap between the front seats. So the mattress can kind of stand up on. I can't explain. How would you explain?
No,
this,
I get
Craig?
It. It creates a flat surface by filling in all the empty space between.
It tetrises the back seat of your car with kind of an L shape, and that L shape squeezes right in.
Do you have to custom it? I guess to your vehicle, you probably have to. Also,
I don't
know. Can you? You can't wear a seatbelt that way.
Well, that's the thing,
right? You're not supposed to be moving.
Oh, right. Okay. It's supposed to be when
you're
parked.
Yeah, of course not.
That never happens. But yeah, well, people sleep in the back seat when they're moving. I don't know. It's not encouraged. I'm sure that it's what are the back seat belt laws? Is it against?
That's state by state, isn't it?
I thought there were no laws for the back seat.
I know in Texas there's not. You don't have to be buckled up in the back.
I'm pretty sure there's none here. It's just the front seat.
It is backseat lawlessness in the state of Illinois. We're just rolling around in the backseat.
Adam, our engineer, claims the opposite. He thinks that all seats have to be belted.
I don't. I think it's just the front
seat. Is that
seat
federal
for
though?
Children.
It's Illinois, according to Adam. So.
Oh, now we have to Google Patty Vasquez. Yep. I don't know. Backseat belt.
Do you have to wear motorcycle helmets in Illinois?
Yes. I think so. Because I know there's a whole lobby that is intent on
Think so here, actually. There are places where you do have to.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people that are not helmeted and they don't
get pulled Texas, over. You do not at all. Yeah. I guess they just figure you're probably done anyway if you crash at 70.
Illinois law requires all drivers and passengers, front and back seat, age 8 or older, to wear a safety belt.
There you go. Well done,
age
Illinois.
8 or old. Under 8, you don't have to?
Under 8,
nah,
no big
you're
deal.
Good back there, yeah. Little guy.
You can roll with the punches.
Yeah. Hold on to the handle.
Yeah, you're right. It is 8 and older. Even if the vehicle is equipped with airbags, passengers under 8 must be in a restraint system.
Like under 8?
Yeah, there's a whole thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Like a booster seat.
Mm-hmm. What grade is 8 years old? That seems old for a booster seat.
Third grade?
Third-ish? Second-ish?
I don't know. It's been a while.
I got kids I don't even know.
I think because they're tiny. Or they're tinier nowadays.
Because the seatbelt doesn't hit them in the right place. So you have to boost them up in order to be appropriately. So it's not like across their neck or across their face.
That's, I mean, the laugh. We covered a lot in this segment.
We really did. And that's the inside of my brain. Time now for our 11:30 news. Here with everything you need to know is Esmeralda Leon.
Well, we have a winner for the Republican GOP side and dead heat in the Democratic side. Two presidential candidates have pulled out of the race. Former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley ended his Democratic presidential campaign midway through vote counting in the Iowa caucuses. Early results showed O'Malley garnering negligible support in the first primary contest. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee dropped out on the Republican side. WGN Radio still in Iowa for the caucuses today. Tune in to the Steve Cochran Show this morning at 6 a.m. for the latest. You can also check out WGNRadio.com. Advocates at the Indiana State House are urging lawmakers to include protections for transgender people to propose civil rights legislation. Those gathered at the state capitol on Monday say the measure preferred by Republican Senate President David Long doesn't go far enough because it doesn't include protections for transgender people. The bill would extend civil rights protections to lesbian, gay, and bisexual people. Figures from Illinois State Police show the agency granted far fewer concealed carry permits statewide in 2015 than the previous year. About 55,000 permits were granted in Illinois during 2015 compared to about 95,000 in 2014. Sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
At 2:15 a.m., I'll talk to the author of Playboy Swings, how Hugh Hefner and Playboy changed the face of music. And then at 3:05 a.m., I'll talk to one of the world's best Elvis impersonators, Rick Sussito. Nick DiGilio, overnights, 7:20, WGN.
Welcome to our resort. Hey, would you like a free round of golf and a couples massage on the beach? Yeah, you get all that, don't you? Next thing you know, you just bought yourself a timeshare. Fast forward 5 years, you've only been back twice, but you're still paying maintenance fees every year. That's the sad story of many of you listening right now. Why are you constantly paying for something you can't even use when you want to use it? I bring you hope, kids. See my friends at TimeshareExitTeam.com. It's a consumer protection firm that'll legally and legitimately get you out of that timeshare once and for all. I trust them. I vetted them. I spent time with them. They got offices right here in Chicago. You're going to meet face-to-face with your personal client advisor. Check out TimeshareExitTeam.com right now. 100% guarantee that they'll get you out of your timeshare or you pay nothing. Don't wait for another maintenance fee to hit. Get out now. TimeshareExitTeam.com.
Do you have a painting to sell that is at least 50 years old? Call me, the Antique Lady, at 773-262-1000. Take a look around your home. That old painting on the wall may not be a masterpiece and may not be in perfect condition, but it could be valuable. A Glenview resident received a substantial check for an original watercolor she had planned to sell at a garage sale. A Chicago couple was pleasantly surprised when we purchased their oil painting, which needed restoration to both the canvas and frame. Call 773-262-1000 to schedule an appointment and receive a fair price for your artwork. BJ Antiques has been at 6901 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago for over 30 years. Whether your painting is in the basement, attic, or on the wall, please give me, the Antique Lady, a call at 773-262-1000.
Hi, it's Wendy Snyder, and for years you've heard me talking about all the benefits that my family and I receive from taking Natron's Healthy Trinity, the world's best probiotic. But take a listen to Jennifer's story.
Hi, I'm Jennifer from Stafford, Virginia. I've been a Natron Healthy Trinity user for over 3 years now. I used to suffer from a severe acid indigestion issue. I was taking a prescription medication, and I didn't feel comfortable with the idea of having to take it every day for the rest of my life because of Natron. I'm not dependent on a medication anymore. I just want Natron to know that they have a customer for life. Thank you.
Call 1-866-4-NATRON. Probiotic consultants are standing by. Call now for a 90-day risk-free trial of Natron's Healthy Trinity. Plus, the first 50 callers get free second-day delivery. Call 1-866-4-NATRON, N-A-T-R-E-N, or visit natron.com and enter promo code Wendy for a 90-day risk-free trial.
Did you know 1 in 5 women with lung cancer have never smoked? My wife is one of them. Join our fight for a cure by donating your old car or truck to the American Lung Association. 90 cents of every dollar goes toward life-saving research and education right here in Illinois. Call 1-800-LUNG-CARS or visit lungcars.org to make your tax-deductible donation. Support the American Lung Association, where old cars give new hope.
WGN Sports, the Blackhawks in Colorado tonight. They are against the Avalanche. The pregame at 7:30, the face-off at 8 with John Weideman and Troy Murray right here on 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. Utah Jazz beat the Bulls 105-96. Bulls play the Sacramento Kings on Wednesday. WGN traffic, we just had an accident on the inbound side of I-90 just east of Dundee Road. That has been cleared. We are seeing a little bit of a residual delay there. Other than that, no major delays. Stevenson, we are seeing a little slow just closer to the downtown area, State Street to Lakeshore Drive. We do have two right lanes closed on the inbound, as well as the exit to southbound Lakeshore Drive is fully closed. Still only about 29 minutes from 355 to Lakeshore Drive, 19 from the Tri-State. Outbound is clear. The Edens is looking good as well. And the Kennedy inbound, we do have the reversibles closed on both sides until 5 a.m. On the outbound Ike, watch for the Wells to Kennedy Dan Ryan. You have two right lanes closed there. And on the Dan Ryan, southbound in the express lanes, Garfield to 63rd, three left lanes are closed. On the inbound exit to the outbound Eisenhower is completely down. Lakeshore Drive clear, so is the Bishop Ford and I-57. And as I said, we had that accident on inbound I-90, but that is clear now. Outbound, we are seeing a little slow at Manheim. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, dense fog advisory is in effect until 2 this morning. Rest of the overnight, cloudy with a steady temperature around 36. Tuesday, snow wintry mix changes to rain during the morning, rain thunderstorms into the early evening, and then snow developing overnight, high of 36. Wednesday, windy with some light snow at times, high of 31. And Thursday, partly cloudy with possible light snow by daybreak, high of 26. 33 at O'Hare, 36 at Midway, 31 in Valparaiso, 34 at the lakefront. Next news at 2 or when news breaks and at WGNradio.com. I'm Esmeralda Leon on Chicago's very own 720 W.
We're at full swing of the presidential campaign now. It seemed only yesterday that we started hearing about candidates announcing their run for the presidential race. And when Donald Trump threw his hat into the ring, one of our regular guests on the show, Adam Selzer, I believe came on our show and announced his write-in candidacy.
That is
Adam
correct.
Selzer joins us in studio. He is a historian. He's a tour guide in Chicago, an author. And how was your turnout today? How was your caucusing?
You know, I started working in Iowa in 1992, going from lunch table to lunch table at my middle school, trying to get people to vote for me in 2016. I was really counting on a big burst of Adamantium today. But Did any of the people who told me they were going to vote for me in 2016 show up in caucus for me? Not to my knowledge. Martin O'Malley seems to have beaten me there.
Mm-hmm. With 0.5% of the caucusers.
Something like that, yeah. With keeps coming up as zero on all the boards, which has got to be kind of humiliating. Especially over on the other side. Ted Cruz looks like a dirty, rotten scoundrel who just asked if he could go to the bathroom.
Well,
that's
me,
the
let
face
me
every
this.
Time.
Yes. Well, when you are you going to track down your classmates from 1992? Because, you know, Ted Cruz sent out a mailer, and this was in the New Yorker and several other publications, that he sent out a mailer saying that there was low voter turnout and your precinct got bad grades because, and it listed like people in the community that didn't vote.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes, that's, which is yeah. That's
I'll,
a little...
I'll send him a mailer
Wait,
saying
real?
I know where you live.
Yeah.
Obviously, because I just mailed you something.
Yeah.
But you know, I feel at this point I set up a joke 23 years ago and I'm pulling it off now and I'm doing it on national radio. So that's pretty good anyway. But as
yeah,
all of
no,
you
I...
said you were going to caucus for me and then didn't caucus for me 23 years later, I know where you live.
See? But here's the thing, Brandon. You were asking if that's true. Here's what the mailer said. Your individual voting history as well as your neighbors are public record. Their scores are published below and many of them will see your score as well. Caucus on Monday to improve your score and encourage your neighbor. So basically, like, shaming your neighbors.
Wow, calling you out.
Wow, that's very strange, which is not obviously the spirit of the entire thing. Accusing citizens of Iowa voting violation based on Iowa caucus participation.
They also called Cruz out for, and this is just Carson saying this, but apparently some Cruz staffers emailed certain precinct heads and said that Carson was out of the race well before he dropped out of the race.
See, and if only Adam had gotten at least one delegate, he could have actually tipped the race to either victory for Bernie or Hillary.
What party were you affiliated with?
Well, I was technically an independent. You could caucus for me, and I was running on both sides, really.
Okay,
it was kind of like Eisenhower in the 50s. Wherever I get the most votes in, that's what I'm running.
That makes sense to me. So where do you throw your support now? Who do you endorse?
I'm going to be endorsing Hillary.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So in studio we have
It just got
Hillary.
Real awkward in here. I'm not going to lie.
Real awkward. I mean, I got no beef with Bernie, but I feel like Hillary knows what she's doing, and I have no doubt that she can do the job.
Well, let me ask you about this. Patty, can we go at it? Is this okay?
Yeah, go at it, boys.
Because like, we were talking earlier on the radio tonight about campaign finance reform, and that's why I am solely behind Bernie.
Yeah.
Because everything else pales, I think, to me. And so the super PAC thing, the taking money from big corporations that obviously have other interests other than the American interest in mind, that doesn't concern you.
It concerns me a lot. I also don't see any way out of it.
Well, isn't that a terrible way to settle?
It's a terrible way to settle for things. But, you know, I don't think any of the candidates are going to push through anything that actually changes that for, like, a generation.
But this candidate gets, like, three or four
Supreme
Court
justices.
Yeah.
Except for a new Supreme Court justice.
Take turns. Take turns. Okay,
That's what's going to take is getting the right Supreme Court justices in there. I think Hillary's just about as likely to do that as Bernie is.
But they're going to buy Hillary's Supreme Court justice. BP Oil and Monsanto and Citibank she owes them a Supreme Court justice that's not going to shut down oil, that's not going to take down big banks, that's not going to tax Wall Street.
Bernie can go ahead and nominate somebody else, but they're not going to get him confirmed.
But I agree. The sad thing is, in my head, I'm sitting here completely agreeing with you. You're right.
I'm just
but I can't operate
this
that
kind of
way,
stuff.
Right?
You know, I spent so much time reading 1850s newspapers and stuff and knowing all of the crap Lincoln had to do to get done what he got done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rough road to get from point A to point D in those days. And it still is now. There's a problem with democracy is sometimes the fact that something is the right thing to do doesn't mean you actually get to do it.
I don't know. Maybe I'm too idealistic. You're absolutely right. I won't bet on anything, but... I just have to nod my head and go, well, what I can do is vote, and I just can't concede like that. I don't know.
I'm bitter and cynical and pragmatic.
Oh, that's very fair. Those things go together.
Ooh.
Wow. And Super PAC supported Jeb Bush and spent more money than Super PACs than for any other candidate, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Look at how much in a few years ago, look at how much Karl Rove spent and got nothing.
Yeah. Or, I mean, and everything, like Iowa today, like, I mean, it doesn't really matter. You're right about Sanders, but I mean, even with Ted Cruz, Santorum won Iowa last time. How'd that go?
I remember when Tom Harkin won Iowa by a huge margin.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, and Del Markin would have been great, too. But that would have been terrific. But if Bernie was running for emperor, I would be thrilled to vote for Bernie if it were for emperor.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, but, like supreme overlord commander, completely just decide.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, he's got my vote. I would worry about defense spending a little bit.
If Bernie is nominated, I'll be happy to vote for him, sure.
But, all right.
Well, I'm with Brandon, though. The idea that so many of our listeners will call in and say, what difference does it make? And we have a lot of cynical people, which is one of the reasons why I go to Springfield, and to let people know that, I mean, you can participate. You can get involved. You can make it a human story. You can, you know, will it have as many, effects? Will you be able to have an immediate response? Maybe not, but I think that you become part of their story, too, when they are standing there making their arguments. I mean, and when they see you in the communities, especially when it's at the state level. Now, you know, when it comes to giving up and saying, well, you know, I'm not going to vote for Bernie because none of what he can do will be accomplished. But if what you believe in is what he stands for, then I think that you kind of have to vote for him, don't you?
There's a way you can say it like that. I actually think Clinton's run a pretty good campaign this year, especially compared to what she was doing 8 years ago. I like where she's come down on things like gun control. Bernie Sanders has he's got a D-minus rating from the NRA. You can get that if you, like, buy an action figure and lose the gun down the vent.
Yeah, I mean, Vermont is a pro-gun state, and he's not going to back that much off on it.
Some of the stuff that he's been far to the left on Hillary, he had nothing to lose by being far to the left on Hillary on it.
But he never changed.
He never really had to.
Right, and but isn't there a slight respect for that? Like the man,
there's definitely a respect for that.
Yeah,
but you know what I'm more concerned about is what is where Hillary ends up more than where she was 8 years ago.
Valid.
And you know, I think she's I've liked what she's come out with. I've liked her speeches. I've liked her ideas this year. I hope she sticks with them. But then again, I remember voting for going for Obama, thinking that he wouldn't go for the health care mandate.
Yeah,
but I also understand why he had to in the end.
You pick your battles too.
When the conversation starts to come around to Hillary, you know, everyone talks about the emails and the investigation. I heard someone this morning say that she's under criminal investigation. I don't know that it's accurate. Is it a criminal investigation?
No,
or not at this point.
I don't think it is.
One day they're going to find those emails and it's going to be like, please print two copies. And,
Well, maybe. Yeah.
But people hear that. They hear she's being criminally investigated, and that becomes part of their story for her, right?
And they've been building that kind of stuff up for the longest time. They've been building that stuff up on her for years, and it's worked against the left, too. I mean, I hear from Bernie people all the time these weird Hillary conspiracy theories.
Yeah, and there are a lot. Did Clinton's run the DNC? News coverage is never going to talk about Bernie. Do I agree? I don't know.
I think this is the most my listeners have ever heard a conversation about Bernie and Hillary. Craig, would you agree? And
yep,
what kind of 100%. Texts are you getting?
Yeah. We're getting very positive texts.
Are you really?
Bernie sounds the same to me as Hillary. I don't understand why you guys are debating this. There's no difference between the two candidates.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all.
No.
Well, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and we thank you so much for sharing yours. I would say that the biggest difference is where the money comes from. Mm.
Yeah, no, I think that there's a lot of big business that's behind Hillary, and if that's not a problem for you, then that's not a problem for you. Whereas Bernie Sanders is not doing that. He's not turning to Wall Street or any other big financiers to run his campaign. I'm pulling up the information about Hillary Clinton if anyone wants to discuss whether or not she's under criminal investigation. According to PolitiFact.com, it's an FBI investigation, but it is not a criminal investigation. With the FBI. So just because the FBI is investigating, it's finding out whether or not it was a security breach by members of the executive branch. And a security referral is essentially a notification that classified information might exist in a location outside of the government's possession. So it is not a criminal investigation, just in case anyone is wondering.
Now, real quickly, another text message. Bernie looks like he's about to keel over at any second. Why would you vote him president?
Well, it depends on who he picks for vice president, then, doesn't it?
That's true.
You know, Trump looked 10 years older today than he did 6 months
ago.
Yeah,
losing's not his color.
Yeah.
More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Mic drop. You are listening Pretty Late. I don't know. Is there dancing? Is there chair dancing? What have we decided on tonight?
Oh, we went hard.
I pulled a couple of muscles.
Talk for a second.
Yeah, it was like that scene in Charlie Brown Christmas.
Patty?
I wish we were videotaping. Yes.
No, I don't know how to be honest about this. They're lying to you.
I was hand jiving.
I just want you to know the truth. I can't.
I was born
crack, crack. A lie. We had a deal and he cracked.
By the way, before we get any farther, I have to correct myself again because I already got an angry text. Hillary Clinton is not under investigation by the FBI. It is actually a general inquiry. So it's not even an investigation, and it's not whether or not she's done any wrongdoing. It's about her home server and where her accounts are.
And
so,
did you see her sit through the Benghazi hearings a few months ago? She just had to, you know, for like hours and hours, they grilled her on this, and she just had to sit there looking bored the whole time, saying, "I'm sorry that the facts don't fit your narrative."
No. Well,
she smacked them, man.
There was one moment that I'm surprised. I mean, like, there was a moment she asked, "What difference does it make?" And I think in the context and the way that sounds,
the context,
And she was addressing whether or not the attack was, you know, the early hours. Well, you know, this, like you said, there were hours and hours of it, but the catalyst for the attack on the embassy, and in the early hours, our government was saying that there were these videos or there were stories going around that, you know, somehow the Muslim community was incited to violence by these videos, and whether it was not, it was an act of terrorism. And she, you know, said, "What difference does it make?" And I think what the point was, these men were killed. Let's talk about what, you know, what was done, what was enacted, you know, the steps that were taken to be more proactive. And anyway, that was something that I think people jumped on quickly as well. And it doesn't sound great when she says, "What difference does it make?" And I don't, you know, like you said, it was hours and hours. Anyway,
we have a couple texts real quick. From the 815, the problem is that most people believe everything they read and hear instead of doing research. They may like what Bernie or Trump says, but they fail to realize that none of it's realistic. None of it would transpire. Both are blowhards who make insane promises to win the vote, and the people who swallow their Kool-Aid are the ones that vote for them. They obviously do not check Bernie's voting history on gun control laws or Trump's business history. This could apply to most any candidate running for this election or any election.
Well, I'm super familiar with Bernie's gun control law votes because he's from Vermont. He's from a pro-gun state. I mean, hey, if you're into the establishment, awesome, man. Rock it.
So what is his voting history?
He leans pro-gun, for sure. I mean, he's got to represent his constituents like a real politician does. He's elected to be the voice of his people, and he's from Vermont. Just saying, if he's elected for America, he clearly would represent American viewpoints because America would be his constituents.
And then a real quick text from the 630. Donald Trump is now a first place loser. Ha ha ha.
Where are our angry Trumpeteers?
Yeah, I don't know.
Angry,
we don't have a
Trumpeteers.
Lot of
that's real. Is that a thing yet?
Yeah, the Trumpeteers have been silenced tonight. So
I just love that term. Yeah. The creative wordplay.
We're not getting any Trump
opinions. Also, we have no Trump opinions. There,
no
76 Trumpeteers led the.
It's an Iowa song.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes. So I do think that a lot of the voters turned out to vote against Donald Trump to not have Iowa be the state that made him their candidate.
Well, it's interesting they all went Rubio. Almost had to have because of those numbers.
Yeah. I kind of felt like, you know, I remember Scott was on here a while ago and I asked him, you know, who did you like out of that the debate? And he was kind of leaning Rubio. He seems like the one guy who's not going to completely embarrass you.
Yeah. No, he's not. He's the establishment candidate at this point, right?
Yeah.
There's nobody else.
At this point, yeah. I mean,
Jeb is.
Yeah, I really thought Jeb was going to eventually they just kind of settle on Jeb, but then he ran such a bad campaign.
Well, and the world, I just think a lot of people weren't going to swallow a third Bush pill, whether you liked him or not, you know what I mean? Right?
And what are those holidays going to be like? I mean, like, George is just going to be, like, in his face about that.
Dad likes me better than you. And we're president. What are you doing?
it just seems so, I don't know, that's going to be very
only
hard.
President sitting at the dinner table, Jeb.
Yeah, you sit at the kids' table.
Yeah.
And watching the speeches tonight, I was struck by how you know, the folks surrounding Ted Cruz didn't quite know how. Like, there was one guy just kind of giggling and was sort of like bouncing a little bit and was really excited. And there was one woman who was smiling, but the corners of her mouth were turned down, so it was this weird like upside down. So, like, it was an upside down, like her jawline wouldn't relax enough for her to it wasn't a frown, but it was an upside down smile, which is, if you can imagine what that looks like. Was very strange. The Clintons, they know how to be, you know, they know how to listen to a speech and nod at the right time. Like, not like Chelsea wasn't nodding the whole time, just at the, because she grew up under this, right?
Did you see the guy eating stickers right behind Hillary Clinton?
Yes. The one, and he had him on his cheeks.
He's going nuts. He's gotta be on some sort of hallucinogen, dude. He's just sticking stickers in his mouth and rolling
Maybe
his eyes.
The stickers
eyes
are
around.
Hallucinogenic. They're like those toads.
All kinds of adhesives. I want to make sure I talk about some of the work that you guys are doing. Tell us about what's going on with Vamp again, Brandon. You are the you're one of the creative geniuses behind this amazing.
I am. It's a co-creation with a couple of incredible humans. There's four of us that run it. It's Vamp, a music comedy drinking show every Friday and Saturday at 10:30. It's Whose Line Is It Anyway? With a live band. It's BYOB and everything's music and everyone's singing and everyone's like Wayne Brady. We've got the Vamp Comedy Cabaret coming up in Fridays at 8 o'clock here in February. If that's a little more low-key, still BYOB, still fun, make them up. So come check it out.
Yeah, and you guys are just enjoying some wild success.
We have a commercial coming out soon, actually, Patty.
What?
Yes, we're going to put it on vampchicago.com. It'll be out really soon. We had an amazing guy, Oliver Berger, who did all of our editing, and I'm so excited for it.
Well, wonderful. That's great news. And Adam, what are you up to with Atlas Obscura and
Atlas Obscura and Mysterious Chicago? You know, I've just been so busy with the campaign lately that's kind of fallen to the side.
Sure.
But really,
tracking
I've been
kids.
So busy. I'm on a deadline for two books at the same time, one about Unsolved Mysteries of Chicago and one about H.H. Holmes, one of our most interesting antique murderers. But we're very soon going to be announcing a whole slate of new events. There's going to be new tours, new film screenings, new lectures, all kinds of cool stuff. But I just realized when I was out there in the green room, I'm in the wrong business. They had Fox News up on the screen, and there was this commercial for a 4-foot teddy bear. And they strongly imply that if you buy this 4-foot teddy bear, you will get laid.
Oh,
and it shows the woman lying in bed with the teddy bear, you know, giving that look, you know. And so I guess you're not just going to get laid, but with the 4-foot teddy bear in the bed with you. And I realized I'm going to make a 5-foot teddy bear.
Also,
I'll take three.
I just saw on BuzzFeed people are unstuffing them and getting in them and making them dance.
I'll take seven.
See, my opinion of Fox News viewers went way up after I saw that this was the kind of people that they feel like they should advertise to. You know?
Is this ahead of Valentine's Day?
Is this ahead of Valentine's Day, yeah. That was strongly implied. You know, chocolates are okay for 3 seconds, and it showed the woman like slamming down the chocolates looking mad, but then you give her a 4-foot teddy bear and...
It's the practicality of the gift that sells it.
Right.
I don't understand.
I want to see that 6 months later when she's like, get this thing out of my house.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, it's just a breeding ground for dust mites and all kinds of... Just
Maybe it's like a body pillow. You know, body
But did we hear what Esmeralda said? People are getting inside them. That is amazing.
People are unstuffing them and
it's kinda like lingerie.
Using them as weird
That's why we need 5- and 6-foot models, too. Yep. I can't fit inside a 4-foot teddy bear.
I need to be represented as a 6-foot man myself.
Yeah.
Please.
I just have to hunch over. Now I have to look for those kinds of moments. Let's see. There have to be images of this on Google.
No, there is. BuzzFeed. There's a whole BuzzFeed list.
The Twitter's all a Twitter about it.
This is, I guess that makes sense to just crawl. You want to be a bear?
With only about 20 seconds left, one more topic we didn't get to. Cindy Crawford is retiring.
Oh, yeah. We have the same mole. Mine grows more hair. I win, but
you don't know that for sure.